This is the IBJ podcast for the week of April 22nd, 2024, brought to you by Taft. I'm your host, Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. If you've lived in central Indiana for more than a few years, you're probably at least familiar with John Stair, a lead news anchor for WTHR TV Channel 13 for 23 years before retiring in 2018. He since has gone from reporting the news to becoming the news. At the age of 65, he is now the mayor of Zionsville, the fast-growing town just northwest of Indianapolis with one of the state's highest median incomes. To be clear, this is not a country club career change. He ran on a platform that included reforming the culture and financial transparency of Zionsville government and taking better advantage of economic development opportunities while preserving the essential character of the town. He jumped into the job in January with a big picture plan for addressing perhaps the most contentious issue in Zionsville over the last decade, how to develop the land just south of Zionsville's gingerbread-like downtown business district. In the last decade, there have been at least three proposals for projects of various sizes and various uses for that area. None of them panned out. The typical result is that residents argue the proposals are too dense, or would create too much traffic, and/or would undermine downtown's identity and power as a draw for visitors. Stair has proposed a master plan for the South Village area that could bring $250 million in investment over 160 acres, including new homes and apartments, office space and retail development, and road upgrades, while devoting nearly half of the area to green space. In this week's edition of the podcast, Stair makes his case for South Village and how he can win over opponents in coming weeks. He also discusses progress on several of his other campaign promises, including lowering the temperature of Zionsville politics. It became heated during clashes between former mayor Emily Styron and the town council over personnel issues, spending decisions, and reviewing the town's finances. Here's our conversation. It's my pleasure to welcome to the podcast John Stair, the mayor of Zionsville. Thank you for inviting me to town hall today.
Well, I appreciate it. It's good to see you.
So, mayor of Zionsville, how does that hit your ears, what, four months into the job?
I'm getting used to it. You know, it's not something that I thought that I would have been seeking out a few years ago, but I think circumstances led me here, and hopefully we can try to do some good things for Zionsville before we're done.
So as somebody who had a full career in another industry, I mean, in an industry where you're not supposed to have opinions about what happens
right,
in government,
right?
Do you struggle at all with imposter syndrome?
No, I really don't, because I don't see this as a political job. I don't see this as an opinion-laden job. I think it's all pretty clear. I think our constituents want to have their trash picked up. I think they want their potholes filled. And when they need a fire truck, I think they want the fire truck to show up when they call it. So I think everybody wants the same thing. It doesn't really matter if you're a Republican or Democrat, and I approach it that way and just try to do the best thing we can do to serve the people that are paying the taxes and paying our salaries.
Do you have any models for this kind of thing? I mean, you've covered a lot of political figures, a lot of mayors. Were you here at time for HUDNUT, or was that a little bit
after? I was here for HUDNUT, the first swing through Indianapolis in the 80s.
Yeah, right.
I think he was a great mayor. And one of the things that made him a great mayor was that I think he was a true cheerleader for the city. And I think that's part of the job. You're the cheerleader in chief for your town. So I think he did a great job at that. And if you're asking me about role models in the recent past, I think Mitch Daniels is somebody that I would say was a great governor. I think he had the people's best interests at heart. He came into the job without an ulterior motive, I think. He had made his fortune. He didn't have to look at what his career was going to be beyond. It fell into place for him and for Purdue, as a matter of fact. But and I kind of see it the same way. You mentioned that I had a long career in another business, and I am very grateful for that, and I'm thankful for the career that I had. So as I come into this job, I'm not trying to build a new career. I'm not building a foundation here to run for governor or run for the Senate or anything like that. This is the only thing I'll ever run for, and this is the only job that really interests me at this time.
I'll ask you the same question I asked Debbie Knox after her second retirement as, yes. as a local TV news anchor. Let's say that you're at home in the evening. You live here in more or less downtown Zionsville.
I live about a half mile away from where we're sitting right now in town hall, so I get to walk to work. That's a great advantage.
Suddenly, there's some kind of major storm or tornado warning. Do you still get a feeling in the pit of your stomach that you need to start working the phones or planning a live hit from the highway?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that. It's kind of the other way around. I'm kind of on the other side of things now. So if we have a public safety emergency or if we have a concern like that, I'm hearing it on the front end from our emergency management people, from our public safety people. So, you know, I need to be in that discussion on how to keep people safe, not reporting on the damage after the damage occurs. So it's a little bit of a shift.
Have you had an experience like that yet?
We had just the other day, I don't know when this is going to run, but I'll say the other day we had the eclipse and a large number of people came into Zionsville for that. We had several different places where there were viewing events. So that becomes a crowd management situation. And we had a very robust public safety plan to make sure that we managed the people that were here, made sure that people got in and out safely, and that they were safe while they were here waiting for the eclipse to occur. So yes, there was a large planning operation that went into that, and I was a part of that every step of the way.
And we were just talking because this is, just for everyone to know, this is Thursday afternoon. It has been raining for 36 hours
yes,
or
yes.
so. And I just told you that I monitored the flooding in the center of town when I came through.
Yes.
Is that what is on your mind right now? You're like, how is our water retention?
Well, that is something to think about. Yes, we have a stormwater system. And I'm happy to say at this point, Thursday afternoon, that the stormwater retention system is working as it should. So we are in good shape here in Zionsville.
Okay. Well, hopefully this will be borne out on Monday. So you already are in mayor mode. You're already thinking about town safety, emergency services. Here's a question that just might be for my own interest. What were those first few months like after you retired from 40 years in the news business?
I appreciated my retirement, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to do that. But I thought, you know, there's still something I can give to the town, something that I can do for my community. So I was appointed to the Parks Board here in Zionsville. And I joke about this, but it's really kind of true. If you are retired and you can stand in the mud at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday morning and talk to a contractor, they make you an officer pretty fast. So it wasn't long before I became the president of the Parks Board. And from that position, I could see that we needed to do a little better job here in Zionsville of communicating with one another, that was a real roadblock in accomplishing the goals that were going to benefit the town.
Who appointed you?
The former mayor appointed me to the Parks Board.
Okay, Emily Styron.
Emily Styron, yes.
Okay. Did you give her a call ahead of time and say, hey, you know, I'm retired, you might have noticed. I'd be happy to help out anything you need. And she'd go, hey, guess what? I've got a job for you.
Well, I knew her. And after she was elected, you know, we did have some conversations about what she wanted to accomplish and how she wanted to do it. And that, I guess, was just an outgrowth of that conversation. I am a big user of the parks. I'm a big believer in the parks. And I think she saw that and recognized that and appointed me to that position, for which I'm very grateful that she did.
And so what is the role of the Parks Board?
Zionsville is a little different, I think, than a lot of places, but the Parks Board in Zionsville actually owns all the parks land. It's not the town that owns it. It's the Parks Board that owns it. So we manage, at the time, it was 500 acres of parkland. Now we have 700 acres of parkland. So that's the role. That's the primary role of the Parks Board. And we also appoint the park superintendent. That's not a city position. That is a Parks Board position. So we have a little more authority, I think, than a lot of parks boards around. And I think it gave me a taste of what good things you can do in a community. And, you know, just a little newsflash here. People like parks, you know, so it's all very positive. Everybody's happy when you bring a new park online or you see a trail expand. I mean, that's a good thing. And it's a good feeling to be a part of that, even in a small way.
So then as the president of the Parks Board, then you have dealings with the town council, the
yes.
mayor and all that. And tell me, what did you see? What concerned you
well,
when
I,
you were
I,
part
I think,
of the process?
I think the communication had really broken down here among the interested parties, among the council and the administration, maybe the department heads too. There just wasn't very good sharing of information and there wasn't much of a common belief on what we should be doing to make the town better and make it a better place for the people who live here. And I really do believe that through proper communication, through being open and sharing information as you have it, it's only going to lead to good. It never benefits anybody to hold information back, whether that's good information or bad information. I mean, put it out there. And I think that if everybody is pulling on the same oar and trying to move in the same direction, that good things are going to happen for the town.
So, and specifically, we saw a situation where the mayor and the town council, a Democrat and then all Republicans, were at loggerheads really from the beginning. I mean, there are a lot of contentious, you know, arguments about, you know, who should be in charge of reviewing the town's finances, who's in charge of personnel, who's in charge of spending decisions. One of the conflicts related to the demotion of the town's fire chief led even to a court battle. So you said prior to taking office that one of your first objectives would be to lower the temperature in Zionsville politics. Focus on communication and relationships. What have you done in the first 4 months to do that?
You just said something as you were asking me that question. You said it was a Democrat mayor and a Republican council, which is true. But I don't think that was the root of the problem. I think the root of the problem might have been the personalities of some of the people involved. As mayor, I have a lot of appointments to make to various boards and commissions. And I didn't ask one person whether they were Democrat or Republican when it came time to appoint people to those positions. I picked the people that I thought would do the best job, people that I either knew or did a little background work on and believed that they would be good in those particular roles. I think that's part of it. And again, I don't think this is partisan the way the state legislature is or the way Congress is. And frankly, I wouldn't want to have any part of those arguments all day long, every day. I like the fact that we're nonpartisan here, and I hope that that's the kind of camaraderie we can build among the people that work here. We have 7 council members. One of them is a Democrat, first Democrat that we've ever had elected to our town council. The rest are Republicans. And I kind of forget which one's the Democrat. I don't know. It's like my children. I have 5 children. One of them is adopted, and I never remember which one it is that's adopted. So, I mean, to me, it's all the same. We're all in this ship together, and now we need to work together to accomplish the goal.
So how do you establish that culture? I mean, this is a business conversation. CEOs, you know, COOs, I mean, they're always talking about, you know, how do we improve the way that we work together? So you come in, you've had 4 months. What have you been doing?
Well, you lead by example, first of all. One of the things I did in the beginning, and I even started this in December before I took office, is I wanted to meet with every single town employee. Because I think what happens is when the parents are fighting, the kids don't know who to take sides with or don't know what to do. So morale was at a low point here. So I think that helped, being able to meet with everybody and just say, look, I value you. What you do is important. And I think we need to all look forward rather than back and, you know, try to do the best thing for the people of Zionsville. Keep the people of Zionsville at the center of everything that we do, and things will turn out okay. And one of the things we've done here might sound like a small thing, but it's turning out to be kind of a big thing. We got a therapy dog who is an employee of the town. We call her the chief morale officer, and she's available to our employees for pets, and, you know, she just kind of comes in and is a very sweet puppy. She's met some of our constituents, and I've taken her to some meetings that I've had offsite, and I think it's been a great addition to the town. She's already the most popular employee in
that
town.
That is brilliant, especially taking him out for meetings. That's really smart.
Ah, she's great. We named her, you know, Zionsville is the Dahlia City. So we did a little online survey, and that was the name that people chose. Her name's Dahlia. We call her Dolly, and she's been a great addition to the staff.
Now, here's where I've done very poor preparation. I do not understand the relationship between the town council and the mayor, who works for who. I have covered town governments and towns of about this size where you have like the city manager style. City manager works at the behest of the council.
Correct.
And then there's, you know, there's somebody who just, they basically take turns being the mayor. This is a little bit different. How does that work?
This is a little bit different, but it's not quite the traditional model of a mayor and the town council. We're still a town. We're not a city. We're a town that has a mayor, and there are only 2 of us in the state of Indiana. So the way I look at it is that I'm elected, as are all the members of the council. So we are equal in that regard. I don't work for the council. The council doesn't work for me. I think it's more of a, like the traditional relationship between the president and Congress, in that the council is the fiscal body and also the legislative body of the town. My job is to administer the departments that we have and our 200 plus employees and bring ideas to the council that they can choose to accept or reject or modify at their will. But they're not working for me. I'm not working for them. Hopefully, we can get together and work together on behalf of the people.
Wow. That sounds squishy.
You know, so far, it's working okay. So far, I think we're developing a pretty good rapport. And when I was a reporter, it would always frustrate me when people in the position that I'm in now would duck me and not answer questions. You know, your job is to answer questions. People elected me to be their representative, and I need to answer questions on their behalf. Even if the answer is, I don't know, or I don't know yet, it's not a satisfying answer, but it's an answer, and people deserve that. So any reporter that calls me, I call them right back if I can't take the call at that moment, and we'll continue to be that way because reporters aren't the enemy. But they're not my partner either. You know, their job is to ask the questions. My job is to answer the questions. And I think being open and transparent, as long as everybody's doing the right thing, you can never go wrong in that way. So ultimately, my job is to carry out the legislation that's passed here to make sure that we stay on track with the budget. And so far, so good. We just got our first quarter fiscal results back, and we are exactly on par with where we want to be. Our expenditures in the first quarter were 21% of the overall budget, which is right where we want to be.
One of the things I think was part of your vision statement as a candidate was to improve the way that finances are, you tell me, the town's finances are more transparent.
Yes.
Improve the accounting, make everything much more clear, not only for the citizens, but for the people working here. And what have you done in that regard?
In our constitution, or our reorganization document, which is essentially our constitution, it says that I'm compelled to report to the town council once a year on finances. We're going to report to the town council every quarter on finances and make sure that everybody is on pace with where we are in the budget, and not just the council, but the public. We do it in a public meeting so that the public can see those results too. We just did it last week for the first quarter, and I'm going to continue to do that. There is no reason that we should be holding any information back from our town council. We can't spend a dime unless the town council approves it. And that's the way it should be. That's the way checks and balances work. And I'm glad that we have that system in place.
So let's talk about the thing I presume is top of mind because you introduced it earlier this month. You announced plans for what we call South Village.
Yes.
$250 million, 160-acre real estate development south of the town's historic village area. And help me out with this. The way they understand it is this is a master plan. It is not a set of buildings that already have stuff drawn up and developers assigned to them. This is a master plan for determining what could be in those areas, what sorts of qualities buildings might have, where things would be allowed to be. Am I close?
Yes. No, you're pretty close. Okay. This is an idea that hasn't been used very often. So PUDs, planned unit developments, allow different uses in one place. So it's not just residential, not just commercial. We can mix the two. So that would be office space on the second floor, maybe some retail shops on the first floor, maybe living space above. That would be a mixed use area. So what we're trying to do is take 160 acres south of our historic village and pull that into one planned unit development. We don't own that land. Private developers own that land. But what this would give us the opportunity to do is choose the size of the buildings, the setbacks of the buildings, utilities, where the utilities are going to go, the architectural integrity of the buildings. So we can control what it's all going to look like as it is developed. The landowners that are involved in this, that own those properties, are on board with this idea because what it would do is give them parameters that they can work in. So they know what the architecture needs to be. They know what the size has to be. They know all the information that they need to know to put in developments. So I think that gives us a very good chance of having the end result be exactly what we want it to be. So it's no more developer A doing one thing and developer B doing something else and sitting back and hoping it all fits together. This would give us the opportunity up front to guide what's going to happen there. And I think it's going to be really important for our downtown area.
Yeah, the difference from what has come before, which, as you say, I mean, has been residential developer says, hey, let's have 250 apartments here. Or, you know, this office developer says, oh, what we really need here is an office park. This is a much more holistic view of a much wider swath of area. And it includes, is it the Creekside Corporate Park? Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that is already a PUD. But I think what we're seeking to do by bringing that together is to standardize the entire area and make sure that we have standards for the entire area where all the pieces fit together, that we don't have pieces hanging out there that are disparate from the others. You know, and I think this is really important because everybody will tell you in Zionsville that our brick Main Street is so important to our town. Not just that only is it our best asset, but it is our heart and soul. So what I think the South Village project can do is support that, bolster that, help that by putting people in proximity to come and use it. Now, that's how you preserve something like that. You don't preserve something like that by making it difficult for people to come in. We want people to come to the restaurants. We want them to come to the shops. And if there are people living, working, and playing nearby, they're going to be much more likely to come there. And I think all the boats are going to rise together, and it's going to be a benefit to everyone for generations to come.
And for people who are not from Indianapolis area, haven't been to Zionsville, this is an area that, where you could probably shoot every Hallmark Christmas movie.
Yes, you could. Into perpetuity.
I mean, it is the exemplar of quaint, small, local, I wouldn't say rustic necessarily, but very homey, you know, village development.
From what I've heard from other mayors that I've gotten to know over the last several months, they all wish they had what we have in their town. And some have spent quite a bit of money trying to create one, but ours is organic. You know, those bricks have been there since 1852, and a lot of those buildings have been there for the last 125 years too. So it is a unique and special place, not just in Boone County, but I think in all of Indiana.
And that is really one of the guiding principles of living in Zionsville is protect the village at all costs.
Yes. Protect the bricks.
This is what we want. I mean, this is why we love living here.
Yes.
So going back real quick to the PUD, if the PUD is approved, and it would be eventually approved by the town council.
Correct.
After the planning commission
would approve it. It's before the planning commission right now, and the next step is going to be the town council.
And even before that, as you said, there is a dozens of community meetings or community chats that are planned.
We have about 30 on the schedule right now. And would like to do up to 75, because I think that the only way this is really going to work is if we listen to people and we take their comments seriously and take their concerns seriously. Zionsville is kind of a different cat than most cities. You know, people like to be collaborative here. They like to take ownership of the process and the result. So if we are successful in having a lot of voices heard, I think the end result is going to be much more robust, and it's going to make the town even better than it is now.
So then it would have an approved PUD, and then when landowners want to get together with developers, those projects separately would still be up for review.
So the PUD is just a land use document. You know, so that's the first step. And part of that would be realigning the road to make travel through town a little more efficient. And that would also open up some of that land for the kind of development that I think we're going to want here.
As I said earlier, there is definitely a residential side of that. Can you tell me a little bit about what the PUD would say about residential?
There are areas where we think single-family homes could be built, some condos or townhouses, and there would be some multifamily units too. Because in order to support the new businesses and office space that we have, we need to have a residential component too. The two have to rise together. You know, it's chicken and the egg, right? You're trying to figure out the right balance. But I think it's going to be very important as we go through this process is sequencing it properly and making sure that the access to our brick Main Street, which as you said, as we've said, is the number one goal, is not compromised in any way, that people are always going to have access to the places that they want to go on the brick Main Street. So if we could start today, I think we're looking 5 years before most of this project is done. And probably because it's municipal government, maybe we're looking at 7 years, because things always take longer than you think, right?
Right. You said it would be office components, retail components, and then Creekside, which is a corporate park.
Yes.
Would be all part of that. So I'm going to play the role.
And can I say one more thing before you?
Go ahead.
40% of that land would be dedicated to green space and conservation. And I think that's very important. It's very important to Zionsville. There's a part of that area that is wetland, and it feeds into Eagle Creek, which is our water supply, our drinking water supply, and also an important source of drinking water for Indianapolis. So we recognize that. And we want to work with the land and do this in the way that's going to be beneficial to not just the people, but to the wildlife and to, you know, everybody that depends on that watershed.
Yeah, which has been something that people have brought up when objecting to projects right. that have been introduced in the last right. 10 years is, you know, what we really need here is green space. Or this needs much more green space than has been allotted.
I'm the former Parks Board guy. I know how much people care about the green space, and I do too, and we should. We all should care about the green space, and we want to make sure we protect it in this process.
So you said multifamily. Do I take you mean apartments?
I mean apartments, yes.
Okay. Apartments are obviously the most dense residential element that you could have. And again, one of the things that people have consistently said or used as a cudgel against these projects in the past is that they're too dense. What would you tell them?
Well, I don't think Zionsville is unique in that. I think there are people here who feel that way. But, you know, we have a housing shortage. And if you look at what is happening here in Boone County, our population is going to grow. It's going to double by the year 2050. We need to have a place to house folks that want to be in Boone County. And I think that that has to be part of the solution. The average home price in Zionsville is around $700,000. That's not reachable for the vast majority of people. We need to have opportunities for young professionals to come here, for young families to come here, because that's the way a town renews itself and that's the way a town grows for generations to come.
When did this plan start coming together? Is this something that as soon as you came into office, you said, okay, we need to have? Or is the planning department already working on this?
I've thought about this for a long time. And we have had a number of studies in that area. There used to be an old gas station there and an old car wash, and Hardee's was there at one point. I mean, it has never really reached its best and highest use. So this is something that I've thought about for a long time, and our planning folks have thought about for a long time. But we have never taken such a big swing. We have never looked at it from such a broad point of view, bringing in this entire 160 acres. There are five, I believe, separate either PUDs or economic development areas within this district. We have spent—
Within the district that you're talking about right now.
Within the 160 acres South Village District. There have been study after study after study. There have been attempts at development that have failed. So I thought, well, if we're going to get something done there, if we're going to finally raise this land to its best and highest use, it's going to take a different approach. And I think the best approach is to cast as wide a net as possible, get as many ideas as possible. You know, one thing that's really important, I'll give you an example, is a community civic space that we want to put in on a lot that we own in the center of town. What will be the center of town when the South Village is built out? And this will be an opportunity for green space, maybe an amphitheater, a pavilion to kind of protect the farmer's market in the summer and maybe have an ice skating rink in the winter. There are a lot of possibilities with this. And I think that it's important that this is something that's representative of Zionsville. So we got back some artist conceptions of what this could look like. And they came back with something that, you know, was kind of, it showed a green space, it showed a band shell, it showed a pavilion, but it wasn't really Zionsville. You know, it was very kind of fancy, kind of Roman Colosseum looking, you know, which is maybe fine for some places, but not here. And one of my neighbors in the village said, you know, this is a railroad town. Why don't we lean into the railroad heritage of Zionsville? And I thought, oh my gosh, light bulb moment. Absolutely. That's exactly what we should do. You know, we don't want it to be kitschy and not something that represents the depth of the people here, but I think that does lean into our heritage, and that's something that I think would really be a good thing here.
And this is the community
center. The civic space. About.
Civic yes. space, okay. Yes.
Which, by the way, will include restrooms. Whew. People really, really want their restrooms. And we're gonna have restrooms as part of this. And we're also going to deal with our parking issue. You know, we don't have enough available parking spaces in Zionsville sometimes. You know, if you want to go to a restaurant, you might have to walk several blocks.
But again, this is the civic space that would be within the South Village.
Yes, it would be. Oh no, it actually would be in the current on the current brick street. So you know the Friendly Tavern.
Yeah.
As it's proposed right now, the Friendly Tavern would be to the north. We have a Dairy Queen that would be to the west, and we have a local ice cream shop named The Scoop that'll be on the east, which I think would be a perfect opportunity for those businesses to really feed into families using that civic space.
But the approach of using a PUD to get this figured out, that was initiated by you?
Yes.
So first that you came in and went to the planning department and said, let's do this.
I had an advantage in that I did not have an opponent in November. So when I won the primary in May, it sent me off on a path. And I guess the other party had until July or June, a few months later, to put somebody on the ballot they chose not to. So I had a pretty clear path. So I was able to get up to speed, you know, and try to make the transition process a little earlier. Had I been elected in November and had 6 weeks, it might have been a lot harder, but I had, you know, 6 months. And Mayor Styron was very open, allowing me to come in and work with the department heads and talk to people. And so I really thank her for that. She was very collegial and very open, and that helped me kind of make that transition much easier.
I'm going to play the role of a Zionsville resident who loves everything just the way it is.
We have a few of those.
This is going to create a huge traffic mess right on the doorstep of our beloved village. This plan is suicide. What are you doing?
I think what this plan is going to do is going to create an economic future for our town that doesn't exist right now. I think this is vital to the long-term economic health of Zionsville. The first thing we're going to do is realign the traffic. So we eliminate those, we eliminate the backups, we eliminate the problem, allowing people to come into Zionsville in a comfortable way, to park if they want to stay here, and we hope they do. But I don't see any other way for the future without doing something to increase our economic vitality. It's like a shark, Mason. If a shark is not moving forward, it's dying. A town is like a shark, and we have to keep moving forward. Times change and things change, and this is the way of the future.
Okay, person next to me at the meeting says, Mayor Stair, there are plenty of other places in town where you could do something like this. Why do we have to do it here?
I think this is the perfect place to do it because, again, I think the way to protect our brick Main Street is to put people in proximity to use it. If we have people living there and working there, they are going to have access, easy access to our brick Main Street, and they're going to use it. If you're close to it, you're going to come and you're going to use it and you're going to enjoy it. You know, one of the conversations we've had was, well, maybe we should build a welcome center. And maybe we should, and maybe that'll be part of it. But I think our entire brick street is a welcome center. And if you've experienced it, you've experienced the people that do business there, the restaurant owners that are there, it is the most welcoming place that you can imagine. And if you haven't been here yet, you should come on out and check it out because I think you'll have a great experience.
Mayor Stair, this much density of development is going to throw off the balance of development downtown. It's going to be like having two different towns across the street from each other. That's not what I signed up for when I moved to Zionsville.
Well, that's not the goal. The goal is to make it contiguous. And I think that the civic space that we're talking about is going to be the perfect thing to draw it all together because it's right in between what exists now and what's going to be existing. And I think that that'll be a center of life in the community. And it's going to be up to us to program that. Christmas tree lighting ceremonies, summer events, farmers markets every week in the spring and in the summer. I think it's a tremendous opportunity to bring everything together and not just make our town bigger, but make it better too.
All right, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
Taft, today's modern law firm, with more than 800 attorneys in 8 primary Midwest markets and the District of Columbia, we provide solutions to the business issues facing middle market and emerging companies alike. We do this through a highly collaborative and inclusive team approach. Taft, the modern law firm. To learn more, visit taftlaw.com.
Okay, we're back with this week's episode of the IBJ Podcast and our conversation with John Stair, former TV news anchor and the new mayor of Zionsville.
Let's look at a couple other things that you've done in your first few months. In January, you said the town will resume its partnership with the Boone County Economic Development Corp after a 4-year absence. Has that happened?
That has happened, yeah.
Well, so yeah, former Mayor Styron chose not to renew the town's contract with the Boone EDC when she took office in 2020, saying she had just had a different vision for the town's economic development priorities. Why was it important for you to rejoin?
When good things happen in Boone County, it happens to all of us. So it's not just about us. It's not just about Whitestown or Lebanon or Jamestown or Advance, Thorntown. I think we're all in this together. And I think in order for Boone County to really thrive, we all have to have a seat at the table. And I think pulling us out of that was not the right direction to go. When economic development opportunities come up, if we're not even sitting at the table, that's not giving us a very good opportunity to take part, either directly or in support of our neighboring communities. I mean, I really do believe that we have to look beyond our own borders to thrive in today's world.
Does this take on even more importance due to, I mean, the sheer amount of development that is slated for the Lebanon area, the park that is planned there?
Yeah, the LEAP District. I think that that is going to be a tremendous driver in the future. And as I said before, our county's population is on track to double by the year 2050. That has tremendous opportunities, but it has tremendous challenges as part of it too. So I think in Zionsville, there will be an opportunity for more housing up in that area, up in the northern part of Zionsville. And I think it's also an opportunity for those ancillary kind of support businesses that are going to be needed when you have that many people in one place. You can't just bring in a bunch of residents and don't give them dentist offices and dry cleaners and restaurants and things like that. So there's going to be tremendous opportunity. And I'll say in Indiana that, from what I understand, there are 75 Indiana counties that lose population each year. So that makes, what, 17? I'm not that great at math, but 17 that are gaining population each year. Boone County is one of them. On a percentage basis, we may be the top county as far as new residents coming in. So we need to embrace that. We need to be ready for it. And we need to manage that growth, not let that growth manage us.
In February, the town issued a request for proposals from companies that would be interested in operating, managing, and maintaining the Zionsville Golf Course.
Yes.
The executive style course, currently run by Zionsville Department of Parks and Recreation.
Yes.
What did you learn about the golf course when you were on the board that leads you in that direction?
One of the things I learned about managing a golf course when you're a parks department is that that is really an outlier to what a parks department is supposed to do. A golf course is a business. Parkland is passive. Two completely different skill sets. And I think that we did not do a good job managing it over the years. We have a golf course manager that does a fantastic job in spite of the fact that he was working for a municipality that is slow and clunky and doesn't really understand how to run a business. I'll give you an example. A couple of years ago, there was a tree on the course that was dead, and it had to be cut down. And it had huge branches that were falling down when the wind would blow and, you know, could really injure somebody if it fell on them. So our course manager came in and said, okay, we have to cut down this tree. And we as a parks board said, great, we'll put it on the agenda. So we put it on the agenda. We approved him going out and getting proposals to cut down the tree. So he comes back a month later and says, okay, I got three proposals. Are they responsible bidders? What is the lowest bid? That we have to take the lowest bid because we're a municipality. And then so after we determined that it was okay, you can hire this group to come out. So another couple weeks goes by before they have time on their schedule to come out and cut down the tree. So we're 2.5 months into it now, when if you're a private entity running that course, I'm sure you have a tree guy that you can call who's going to be there the next day and fix that unsafe situation. And that's the kind of flexibility that a private operator will have. Not only that, you know, better facilities, better food and beverage options at the course. I just think that putting it in private hands is so much better than trying to run a business when you're a town. Town should be a town. Town shouldn't own a business or run a business.
Another campaign vision was to create a community recreation center. What do you have in mind there, and where are you on that?
That is something that is on the radar. It's a little bit on the edge of the radar right now because we have a lot of things going on. And one of the things I learned in the lead up to taking this job is that you can't do everything all at once. You've got to prioritize things. The community center is still very much of a priority for me because I think we really need that in town to kind of bind the town together. But we have to wait until our partners are ready, and a potential partner is our school district. Another potential partner is one of the medical groups in town, maybe the YMCA. But I think we have identified some land that could be used for this, which is in a position where it's to the west and north of the core of the city, which is where our growth is happening. Also in the direction of Whitestown, and could maybe bring in Whitestown as a partner and make it available to folks in Whitestown too. I mean, we're already tied together with Whitestown. Most of the Whitestown population goes to Zionsville schools. So we are really one community. And that's another priority. You're probably getting to that next, is our relationship with Whitestown, which has been fraught over the years for a number of reasons. And I think we should move beyond that and build some bridges between our two towns. We have way more in common than the things that divide us.
What is your understanding of how that came about? Why were
Well, it was an annexation situation that happened 12 years ago now, 15 years ago, when Whitestown was annexing a lot of land and Zionsville said, hey, wait a minute, you know, that should be part of Zionsville. And there was a legal battle that went to the state Supreme Court, and it ended up with Zionsville creating the position of mayor. And also it settled some of the land disputes that existed between the two towns. But I think the hangover from that was that you had people in positions of power in both places that were, you know, holding on to some baggage over that. But time marches on, and I think time heals all wounds, and a lot of those folks have moved on in one way or another. So I think we're at a point now where we can reset that relationship and make that relationship a lot more positive for everybody.
Have you reached out to the folks over there recently?
I have. They recently hired a new town manager who I think is going to be great. Former Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard is involved as a consultant, helping them get some pieces in place so they can move forward. So I feel very positive about where we are, and look forward to better cooperation between our two towns in the future.
So Zionsville's population grew from about 14,000 people in 2010 to, what is it today, close to 32,000?
Close to 35,000.
35, okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot of growth. Was that primarily through annexation or something else?
The annexation occurred around that time, around 2010. I think 2014 was the final piece. Zionsville is the third largest municipality in the state. We have 67 square miles. And the landmass that we have is the same as Westfield and Noblesville combined. So we have a lot of room out there for growth to occur. I mean, much of it is going to be corn here in a couple of months, but it is Zionsville and it is our jurisdiction. And, you know, we have areas that growth will continue to occur. One of the things we haven't done is a comprehensive planning process in the last 20 years. That is something we're just beginning. And I think that is going to be a really important document in guiding Zionsville forward.
I mean, as we've seen in Lebanon with the thousands of acres that were either put under contract for the LEAP district. And people who live in rural areas have really powerful feelings about, I mean, using rural land for development. So I'm assuming that is a group that you need to get together with.
Yeah, we have those people here too. And I respect their voices. We were talking about the brick Main Street and how important that is to Zionsville at large. But there are people that live in our rural districts in North Zionsville and West Zionsville to whom the historic nature of their farmland is every bit as important to them as the village is to the people that live closer to it. And I think those voices need to be heard. I think those voices need to be respected, and that we need to make sure that those important rural historic areas are protected. Now, again, we have 67 square miles, so I think we can do that. And I think we have opportunity to raise our corporate tax base too, by some development around the edges of Zionsville.
How much chatting have you done with the mayors in the Hamilton County area? I seem to remember, was it Scott Willis?
Yes.
In Westfield, who came on at the same time as you did.
He did.
Are you guys on the phone every night?
Not every night, but actually, I think Scott is a great guy. I think he's doing a great job there in Westfield. He's got a lot on his plate right now. But he and I think, have sort of commiserated over the months because we were in similar positions coming into what could be considered a dysfunctional situation, both being first-time mayors, both being unopposed in November. So he and I talked quite a bit. And in fact, I'm going to meet him next week for a cup of coffee, and we're going to talk a little more. But I think he's doing a great job. Sue Finkham has been very supportive and very helpful, and it's been good to talk to her.
Yeah, right. And a new mayor, Carmel, in an extraordinary situation where her predecessor was there for, 28 years?
28 years, yeah. And Chris Jensen in Noblesville and Scott Fadness and Fishers have both been very supportive and very open and very helpful, very accessible. It's funny. I joke that when I was a reporter, people like that would kind of avoid my calls, but now they call me right back, which is nice to see. Yeah, but I appreciate them. And I don't want to forget the people here either. You know, Matt Gentry up in Lebanon, he's been quite a supporter too. And I appreciate his help and his time.
What's an example of something that where you'd be like, oh man, what is this? When you'd call somebody, one of your mayor friends, and say,
I don't know if I've come across anything like that yet. I mean, I think I had a pretty good idea of what to expect. And so far, there haven't been any real big curveballs. I do know. I think my expectations hopefully are in the right place. I know that things take longer. than you think they should. I know it's always more complicated and it's always more expensive. So if I begin from that starting point, maybe nothing will really surprise me too terribly much as we go forward.
People who cover government for a living, you know, for the media, I think after a while you kind of get the sense of, you know, I kind of understand how this works. Yeah. I mean, I wonder if I could do this.
Well, here's one thing that I've always understood, and covering a lot of local governments over a lot of years, is that if you don't identify goals, you're just kind of flailing out there. And I think the best local governments are the ones that identify those goals, communicate well about them, and, you know, try to continue along the same line, you know, slow and steady. It's not trying to do everything in the first 5 minutes. You got to give things time and let things sit in. One of the things that Scott Fadness said to me early on in a conversation, he said, you know, it's important to identify the why before you talk about the what. And that's and I know that, but hearing him say that and seeing the success he's had in Fishers over the years, it really makes a whole lot of sense. And you know what we used to say in broadcasting? And maybe you say this at the IBJ, I don't know. In communication, you tell people what you're going to tell them, you tell them, and then you tell them again. And that's the mindset that I have, is it's really hard to over-communicate. You need to communicate everything as best you can, as well as you can.
Since becoming mayor and now being inside, as it were, for several months, have you discovered anything that you hadn't seen from the outside?
Not really. I think that a job like this is really the same as anything else. It comes down to communication. It comes down to people. I think that we have a tremendous staff here from top to bottom, and we're really fortunate to have the people that we have working for our town government. And, you know, I think if those people have agency to do what it is that you're hiring them to do and asking them to do, I think good things happen. And, you know, we are very fortunate here to have good people. I try to keep a high level of contact with as many of them as I can. And I feel really good about where we're going. And for me personally, asking Kate Swanson, I don't know if you know, I know a lot of people out there know Kate because she's been around a long time with the Chamber of Commerce and business advocacy and things. But asking her to join me as deputy mayor was the smartest thing, second to proposing to my wife, was one of the smartest things I've ever done, because she has been a great partner, and I think will continue to be a great partner as we
move
forward.
Was that a new position?
No, it was not a new position, but I did ask her to join me as we were still campaigning. Normally, that's something you would do when you take office, but, you know, I really felt that, you know, she was so perfect for this role that I wanted to kind of lock her up early and use her advice and use her help. And she really has been a great partner, not just when it came time to campaigning for the job, but also in doing the job.
You've got a mayor and you've got a deputy mayor. What does the mayor do versus what the deputy mayor does?
Well, I think that my job as mayor is to cast the vision, and the deputy mayor's job is to help fulfill that vision. And we work together very well. We have a high level of communication, and I think we're on the same page with things. And she comes to this with a business background. She worked for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, worked for the local Chamber of Commerce, the Mitch Daniels Leadership Foundation. She has been involved with advocacy groups for businesses, for small businesses. So she brings some skills to the table that very few people have, certainly that I didn't have. And she's using those for the benefit of the businesses and the people of Zionsville. And I think that's a win-win for everybody.
So you set the vision, and then she herds the cats.
She helps herds the cats. I herd a few cats myself.
Okay.
But no, I think that, you know, it works better when you work together. I don't like to have a big division in responsibilities. I like to make sure that we're all on the same page.
You mentioned you and your wife, Amy, have 5 kids, 3 daughters.
That's a lot of kids, yes.
2 sons. How many are out of the house now?
4.
What's left?
I have a high school senior who's going to be moving on to college in the next couple of months. So we'll miss her when we become empty nesters, but I think she's well positioned to do good things in her life.
Have any of them taken an interest in careers in the media?
They have not. Nor have they taken an interest in careers in politics. So, I don't know. Maybe I haven't been a good role model, but no, they've all chosen really diverse things. I have a daughter who's a fashion photographer, a son who's an editor for a website, another who's an engineer, MIT trained and Purdue trained engineer, and then a daughter who does sales for a research company. And my daughter that's in high school wants to major in anthropology. So, you know, we'll see where that leads her.
That's
so
outstanding.
Pretty wide range of interests among the kids.
Well, and now you have a little bit of extra time.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm happy to give that to the betterment of Zionsville. I mean, I hope at the end of the day and whenever I'm done with this job that, you know, Zionsville is just a little bit better off than it was in the first place. You know, it's not – Zionsville doesn't need to be torn down and rebuilt. We don't need a Zionsville 2.0, but I think we can do a little better job in communicating with one another, in casting a vision, and looking out over the time horizon to see what the town needs to be in 15 or 20 years. And if I can help kind of push us in that direction, I'll feel like it's been a success.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to check in a year.
Okay.
And see how it goes.
I'll be here. I hope. I'll be here. Plan on being here.
Great. Well, thank you so much for all the time. This has been really helpful.
Thank you, Mason. I really appreciate the opportunity.
My thanks again to John Stair. And folks, before you get on with the rest of your week, there are some stories in the latest issue of IBJ I want to draw to your attention. First up, the deal announced this month that landed Indiana its largest ever capital investment commitment was 2 years in the making, a journey that saw state and federal officials travel overseas to make the case that Indiana would be the best fit for the $4 billion investment. Mickey Shuey has the inside story behind negotiations with South Korean chip manufacturer SK Hynix. Also in this week's issue, restaurateur Thomas Main explains the staying power of his highly regarded eatery Tinker Street. And we have all of the honorees in IBJ's 40 Under 40 Class of 2024, featuring up-and-coming leaders in the business, government, and not-for-profit worlds. And again, you can find these stories and features in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at IBJ.com. And thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.